Exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/ducks for exclusive promotions. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
Coast to coast, nonstop action. This is the premier source for National Hockey League news. Scores, highlights, and the Anaheim Ducks. It's time to light the lamp with Alexis Downey.
Very happy to welcome on today TSN Hockey Insider and senior NHL columnist for The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, thanks so much for taking the time today. We appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yeah, my pleasure to be on again, Alexa. I think I was on last year at some point, but I know that the podcast is doing great. So congratulations to that, and happy to be on here.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. Glad to have you back as well. But how's the season been going for you this year, just in where we're at in the year and getting down to the final stretch?
Yes. Well, always good to get the trade deadline out of the way when you do what I do. So a little quieter now and the start of the playoffs. I'll travel more during the playoffs. Bounce around from series to series, and that becomes a busy time of year of its own, of course, leading up to the draft, which is literally the craziest time of the year between the draft and July 1st free agency. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me about trade deadline, and while it's still a big thing because the lead up to trade deadline seems to take forever, like it's now 5-6 weeks, people have interest in finding out what's going on, and that's fine. But I will tell you that what I've seen happen over the last, I'd say, 6 to 7 years is that the draft and the lead up to July 1st has become more impactful and crazier on the remodeling of NHL teams in terms of the quality of trades and signings and decisions that are made that are way bigger than the in-season trade deadline. And whether that's a byproduct of the salary cap system, I'm not 100% sure, but I will tell you that this year, late June in Vegas at the draft, will be nuts, I think, with the potential moves that we're going to see.
You talk about that draft in Vegas. I mean, is that the perfect location in your mind to have possibly the last draft before they decentralize it?
I don't know. Is it the perfect place for a bunch of 18-year-old young men to be when they're not?
That's true.
They're not supposed to be in most establishments there. I don't know.
Maybe for everyone covering it.
Yeah, for the rest of us, it's fine. And I guess for the players' parents.
very good point.
Yeah, but I think it'll be pretty neat. I think the league has put a lot of resources and time into what it's going to look like at the Sphere. So I think it's going to be something we'll never forget from that perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, but we were having this debate internally, myself and a couple of colleagues. Do we even cover the draft after this year? I'm going this year for sure. Mm-hmm. But starting next year with the decentralized draft, if GMs aren't going to be on site at a decentralized draft, and that's my bread and butter, then what's the point of me going, I guess? Now, It depends what you do for a living. There are people whose specialty is to cover the draft and to cover prospects, that they'll keep going because the kids are going to be there in a decentralized draft. But with GMs not being on site, you know, I'm not sure yet whether I'll go. I may just cover it from Toronto. We'll see.
So that would certainly alter the you know, availability and just being able to talk to them, that would almost make your job a little bit more difficult, would you say, in this case?
I mean, Alexa, I'd say yes and no, because certainly over the years, the draft of it has been great for, yeah, that kind of face-to-face, you know, setting up meetings with different front office people, you know, and, you know, in coffee places or in a bar, wherever it is. Or in hotel lobbies, especially, I guess I would say. Yeah, I mean, I did a bit of that last year in Nashville with the draft. But I will tell you what has happened over recent years is that, you know, front office people have had their days so charged. And it used to be like everyone, all the teams stayed basically within two or three hotels. And now, like last year in Nashville, it was really spread out to mm-hmm. about a dozen hotels. And so logistically, it's become harder to meet with everyone you want to meet with in the lead up to the draft. And so I found myself taking a lot of phone calls in my hotel room last year in Nashville. So my point being, it's almost like we're halfway towards what it's going to be like for us in a decentralized draft, which is that mm-hmm. so much of it was on the phone anyway. So from that perspective, you know, it's probably a smooth transition, but I still much prefer to meet with people, you know, catch up with people in person, always better than over the phone.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah. It's something that I guess I hadn't thought about from that perspective as well. From our end, it's always fun to talk with the new draftees and whatnot. But from your end, very, very interesting. But in looking at this year's trade deadline, you know, just having the possible impact that it might on a couple of the teams, just a few teams that I know that you highlighted in your recent article with The Athletic, specifically that, had bigger trade deadlines, teams like the Golden Knights, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Avalanche, of some of those deadline acquisitions, you know, a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, what is your perspective of where they're at as, you know, they look to chase possibly another cup this year and who they were able to acquire?
Yeah, I think I referred to, and Winnipeg Jets is the other team mm-hmm. I had in that piece. I really feel like those three teams that you mentioned along with Winnipeg kind of won the deadline. But as you also probably read at the start of that column, Alexa, I also point out that winning the deadline doesn't always mean winning the cup. You got to be very careful to draw a direct line between those two things. As the four GMs I spoke with totally agree with, by the way, for that piece. Mm. But it sure is still a good feeling to give your team every best possible chance heading into the playoffs, and that's what these four GMs have done. Vegas, as I wrote, they're the team that stirs the drink in the NHL. Mm-hmm. There is no team that is more polarizing among hockey fans than the Vegas Golden Knights. Let's just call it for what it is. I think there's a lot of jealousy from outside that market about how this team has just come in and basically dominated from day one as an expansion team, going mm-hmm. to a cup final right out of the gates, winning a cup last year, always being in the thick of it, always finding ways to add players, big name players in the summer and at the deadline. They're always in it. It's like they're acting like the New York Yankees of hockey, even though they have none of the history. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting thing. And because of that, you know, again, the reactions are pretty hot and heavy about the Golden Knights. I personally, there's only one answer I have, and that's that, you know, every fan base should want their team to be acting like them. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. it's about winning and you know, Vegas finds a way. But again, the controversy this time again is, you know, Mark Stone going on LTIR afforded Vegas the salary cap space to go out and make a number of moves. The reality is he has a lacerated spleen. That's no joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't know when he'll be back. So no one's cheating the system here. Mm-hmm. I need to point that out given some of the reaction from around the league. But, you know, no surprise that they were in on rental players like Anthony Mantha and Noah Hanifin, and they end up with both because we were tracking that pretty closely. The one that completely blindsided us was Tomas Hertl from the San Jose Sharks. Mm-hmm. There was no lead up to that, no whispering about it. You know, when Bob McKenzie broke that story on our Trade Center show on TSN, you could feel the studio shake, honest to goodness, people's reaction to it, because no one saw it coming. And Vegas GM Kelly McCrimmon enjoyed pointing out to me in that interview, in that piece, that he took great satisfaction in the fact that, you know, him and his counterpart, Mike Greer, kept that under wraps and no one had sense of it. And, you know, I said to Kelly, well, that's not what I want to hear as an insider. but they did do a great job. And part of it is Alexa, is because Hurdle was not put on the market. Like, it's not like other teams got to get involved on it. It was really a very secretive conversation between two teams that ultimately got done when Hurdle decided to waive and the two teams agreed on compensation, mm-hmm. on salary retention, But that's a trade we won't soon forget. I mean, he's a really good player and he's healthy. And Vegas didn't just improve their team for this year. I mean, they have a player for several years now in Hurdle.
With a guy like Jake Guentzel going to the Carolina Hurricanes, did you think that that would be a good fit for him and what the Penguins were able to get in return?
I think it's a tremendous fit. Hurricanes deserve tremendous props for winning out on really the number one rental name this year on the market. In particular, for two reasons. One is that this is a very un-Carolina-like move. They don't like to spend big on rental players. And it's kind of limited their ability to add at the deadline the last few years, and it's led to a lot of criticism. But owner Tom Dundon just doesn't believe in it. So in this particular case, I think GM Don Waddell deserves a lot of credit for convincing everyone that this was finally the time. But they did so without really giving up a first-round pick. It could end up being a first-round pick if they make the Cup final. And at that point, they're not going to blink twice about losing the 31st or 32nd overall pick in the draft, right? So so they protected that end of it and, frankly, didn't really give up what they perceive as their top three or four prospects in the organization, which is not to say that they gave up nothing. I mean, the Hurricanes draft so well, much like the Ducks do, by the way, that the Hurricanes have players in the pipeline that Pittsburgh was still able to, you know, put together, I think, a decent package. So I think it works for everyone. But the real story here is that the Hurricanes, as GM Don Waddell explained to me, were not in it early. There were other teams that on Guentzel first, and Carolina kind of came from behind. This were a horse race, and and got everyone at the end. They waited till Wednesday morning before the deadline to really meaningfully engage in trade talks with Pittsburgh, and I think showed a lot of patience in the approach they took. And I think one of the fascinating pieces of that interview with Don Waddell is that he said to me that, you know, the nervous time is when you make your offer, and he made his offer to Cal Dubas of the Penguins, and then he didn't hear back on that Thursday for 3 or 4 hours from Pittsburgh. And, you know, so many thoughts cross your mind. One being that someone else is getting him, right? And secondly, it's Thursday. It's the eve of the deadline. So what do you do next if you don't get him? And again, it's a real pressure-packed moment because Carolina didn't do much last year at the deadline. So, I mean, I think they would have pivoted to maybe Tyler Toffoli or someone else. But the point being, when they got the call back from Pittsburgh saying they were it, they were really relieved and were able to get the deal done that night. So always fascinating to sort of, have a GM explain how that played out.
Yeah, definitely good to learn the backstory of things sometimes, and very fortunate, you know, to be able to hear that and have that comfortability just getting to hear those stories. You mentioned also, of course, the Anaheim Ducks. They were able to acquire a first round pick, trading away Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick, going to Edmonton. What was your impression of the Ducks trade deadline?
Yeah, I think they did a really good job in that trade, in particular because as the week went on, it really became a buyer's market. And I don't know if they get a first round pick in that deal if they've waited an extra 2 days. So timing in these things is paramount. Now, I don't think Edmonton cares that they paid the price. I mean, they feel that they filled very specific needs in Henrique and Carrick, and it brings versatility to the Oilers' top nine, and that's what they were looking for. So I don't think there's any buyer's remorse at all from Edmonton's point of view. But the fact is, as we got to Friday and the prices plummeted, and the Devils wanted a first for Toffoli. They didn't get it, but they waited till Friday to make that deal. Again, not a criticism because it's hard to predict the nuances of a trade market. So some years by waiting, the prices actually go up. But this year it was the opposite. Jason Zucker went for a 6th-round pick to Nashville. Now, part of that is Arizona didn't want to do any salary retention, and that's part of the mechanism now in terms of asset value. So they only got a 6 for a decent player. So it just shows you that I think Pat Verbeek, the Ducks GM, was wise to decide to complete that deal with Edmonton when he did, because I'm sure you're always wondering, could it get better if I waited another day or two? But in this case, it would not have. So smart to do the deal when he did it.
And just a reminder that we have exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/ducks for exclusive promotions. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
With the way deals have been coming in, I mean, you know, there was a time where a lot of the deals would be right around the deadline or the day of the deadline. Now it's kind of stretched out a little bit more. Do you think that helps the GMs in their, you know, approach to things?
Well, you're right about being stretched out now. A couple of years in a row, we've got a number of deals in the lead up, and that our boss at TSN, I think he was kidding, but said, should we do insider trading every day in the lead up to a deadline? And was he kidding? Was he not kidding? I guess we'll find out next year. But, I think part of it is you've seen how many deals the last few years have involved, for example, a third broker team to further retain on salaries. Some of these deals have become really complicated, and whenever you get a third team involved, it adds to the complexities of it and how many discussions have to be had, and does the math all work? And some of those, by the way, fall apart too. So I think what I'm hearing from some teams is that if they know they're in a pretty complicated situation, and in fact, that's another reason I think Edmonton want to get the Anaheim deal done when they did, because they had a broker involved as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you want to make sure that it's not like Friday, 10 minutes before the deadline, and you're still having to figure this out. There have been deals that have fallen apart on the last day because of this. So I think the salary cap complexities have fueled both the buyers and sellers at times to get stuff done ahead of time. But, you know, there's also a more traditional reason. Jim Rutherford, president of the Vancouver Canucks, is famous for this from his days in Carolina and Pittsburgh. But he has always strongly believed that you make your deals in January if you can, because you want the player to have a long time to adjust to his new surroundings. Mm-hmm. And so he's always tried to make deals early. He did so again this year, him and GM Patrick Alvin getting Elias Lindholm back on January 31st. And listen, it's not like he's the only one who believes that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other GMs. Winnipeg got Sean Monahan from Montreal on February 2nd. And Monahan's been a terrific ad, and it looks like he's been a Jet forever. So there's great incentive in wanting to act early if you can for that reason alone, because some players really struggle to adjust. Some players are just, different system, different line mates. Some players, you leave your family behind and you're living in a hotel room the rest of the year. There's all kinds of dynamics, I think, often that we don't think about, but it doesn't always work. That's why the deadline's not a sure thing. There are deals that just don't pan out sometimes. And so the earlier, the better. The problem is, of course, as you know, is the longer you wait, the easier it is salary cap wise to make deals. Mm-hmm. So that's why some deals still go the distance. But you're right. I think what we're seeing now is a pretty repeatable pattern over the last few years, which is deals on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday ahead of the Friday deadline. No question.
Was there a team that you were surprised they weren't active in making any moves?
Yeah, Boston, I'd say, but it wasn't for a lack of trying. Mm-hmm. I mean, Don Sweeney's a really smart GM, and a year ago, he was spending assets like crazy, Orloff and Bertuzzi. I mean, the Bruins were one of the most active teams a year ago, and yeah, ended up losing in the first round to Florida in a shocking upset. I'm not saying that's why he didn't add this time around. I know from talking to different people around the league, he was certainly, he had tried, for example, on Elias Lindholm back in January before Lindholm up in Vancouver. I mean, there had been talks with Calgary and Noah Hanifin from the Bruins' perspective. But every time, I think what limited Boston this year is they didn't have their first-round pick, right? They traded last year for Bertuzzi. So teams that spent big last year were a little more control this year because of the lack of assets. I mean, Toronto Maple Leafs are another example where even though they did make a few moves and adding Joel Edmondson and obviously Ilya Lyubushkin from the Ducks and Connor Dewar from Minnesota, they were all sort of more medium moves, not big moves. And it's because the Leafs have spent a lot of first round picks and an asset the last few years going for it. You think about, you know, last year, the prices paid for Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen and all these moves that they made a year ago. It limited the ability of Brad Treliving, who, you know, the Leafs tried like crazy on Chris Tanev, but, you know, didn't want to spend a first round pick because that's one of their few remaining assets left. And he ends up going to Dallas instead. So teams like Toronto and Boston were a bit quieter. And normally those two teams over the last several years have been big time deadline teams, Alexa. But it's also because of the cupboards being a little bare in terms of assets that they can spend. So the other global view of this, and Kelly McCrimmon talked about this with me, is that a year ago, the bigger trades were all in the East, pretty much. The Eastern teams went crazy, Boston, Toronto, et cetera. This year is the West. The arms race is very much in the Western Conference. Basically, seven of the eight teams currently in a playoff spot in the West all made moves. The only one who didn't was LA. And I think there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is that I think the Kings spent a lot of assets over the last year, especially last summer. You think of the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, but also a year ago, the deadline, you know, Gavrikov, et cetera. I think it was time for them to be a little quiet asset-wise.
Yeah.
And so, but otherwise, everyone in the West went at it. And, and you know, the nervous thing about that is four teams go out in the first round. So we'll see who has buyer's remorse.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, now that, you know, we're in this real final stretch of the season, getting closer to playoffs, you know, and about a little over a month or so. But what are you keeping your eye on, you know, in this final stretch of games, just if there's a storyline or a team or a player in particular?
Yeah, I mean, we're not having the normal races of other years. First of all, it's interesting. I mean, I guess in the East there still is with, you know, is it going to be Philly or the Islanders or Detroit or Tampa? So there's a bit of a race, but it's not, you know, it drops off in a hurry. And in the West, there really almost isn't. I mean, Vegas is eighth in the West right now at 77 points as we tape this. And then it's St. Louis, Minnesota at 71. That's pretty hard math, as you know, going forward. But having said that, in the West, I'm fascinated, Vegas has only won three of the last 10. Are they going to get going here? I mean, they've had a pile of injuries. They just made all these trades. Are they really going to be the eighth seed in the West going in? I mean, imagine how scary that would be for, you know, for Vancouver or Colorado. Oh, here you go. Here's your prize for being first. For Vegas go the ninth Stanley Cup champions. So how the matchups play out interests me. I mean, and conversely, if Vegas finishes ahead of LA, which they very well might. They're both tied right now. That sets up probably Edmonton-Vegas in the first round. My goodness. I mean, that's worthy of a conference final, never mind a first round series. You know, same in the Central. Like, imagine the importance of winning the Central right now, potentially. Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg are basically all tied. Winning that division means you avoid the other two in the first round. So that's the... You know, I really look for that. I mean, you always hear this time of year that teams that are sure of making the playoffs have the dog days of the season because they're just worried about staying healthy. Well, these aren't the dog days for Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg. They're all trying to win the division. So that stuff fascinates me.
Also in the race, you know, for most points in the NHL right now, there's three guys over 100 points. Has that been something that has intrigued you this year?
Yeah, well, I want to see if Connor McDavid can get to 100 assists, never mind points. I mean, he's already over 100 points, but imagine being over 100 assists. It hasn't been done very often in NHL history. But, you know, the other thing is I tweeted this out earlier today, but, you know, it was pointed out that I believe there's already 17 players with on pace to finish with more points than Jamie Benn's Art Ross winning total from 2014-15. But that's reflective where the game is now. And so I tweeted out, on top of that tweet, I tweeted out the fact that, you know, right now the average goals per game is 6.22 in the NHL. You know, the year that happened in 2014-15, the average was 5.46, so almost a full goal a game more. Last year, the average was 6.36, even higher. And that was the highest since 1993-94, last year's goal total in the NHL, goals per game. And so really over the last decade, we've seen the goals per game steadily increase. And it's reflective of what you see every night. There's just more offense. You know, the goalies have paid the price. Their save percentages are lower than what we used to. You know, we used to look for a 920, and now I think if you're just a 900, you're a good goalie, you know. So it's interesting as the game evolves every decade that you have to sort of keep up with it and understand what you're seeing. And certainly one of them is that, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't know if anyone could get 100 points. And now it's a given for the top 10 in scoring.
One more question for you, Pierre, before I let you go. You know, there's been talk this week of, you know, the NHL possibly heading back to Atlanta with Alpharetta Sports and Entertainment led by Anson Carter, you know, formally requesting that the NHL possibly commence the expansion process. Why do you think, you know, the NHL heading back to Atlanta for what would be the third time? Do you think that this time could be different and it, you know, could possibly work there?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, first of all, Anson Carter's group, I think it's neat that he's involved given his history with the Thrashers, but he's one of three groups. I mean, that's the other story that doesn't get talked about a lot. There's actually three competing groups that have expressed interest in the NHL owning a team in Atlanta. Not just one, three.
Wow.
So that's number one is that it's hard to tell who's in front and, and the jockeying going on there between the three groups. And as someone from the league pointed out to me this week, you know, there are some in that group, in those three groups, that are more ready to, you know, to welcome a team ahead of some others without saying who. So all that adds layers to it all. I would also say that, and this is my own perspective, perhaps not the league, but from what I can tell, and I've had a couple of interviews with Brian Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, over the past year, it just feels to me that Salt Lake is ahead in the pecking order right now of Atlanta. It just feels like everything is, the momentum in Salt Lake is through the roof. So I don't know if that means potentially, you know, being ready to welcome the Coyotes if things can't get figured out in Arizona with their arena. Or if Arizona does figure out once and for all its arena situation, you know, does that mean Salt Lake gets the next expansion team? And the other thing I would point out, and this was said to me a couple months ago by someone from the league, but I always thought that if the league expanded again, that it would expand by two to keep the conferences, you know, you know, we're at 32 right now, so go to 34. But it was pointed out to me that the league is very much willing to just go to 33 as a first step. So that's why it's important, you know, and I may be wrong, but if I'm right about Salt Lake being ahead of Atlanta, then that means Salt Lake would be in line for the 33rd team, or like I said, potentially the Coyotes.
Very interesting. Well, Pierre, this has been awesome having you join us on Light the Lamp today. We appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully we can have you on again sometime down the line.
Sounds great, Alexa. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And get your home cozy with Gettle Rejuvenation for just $129. We'll prep your HVAC for the season so you're ready to cheer on our Ducks. Call 866-671-9822 or visit Gettle.com/Ducks. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on Duckstream.